Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and welcome to The Miracle Within You, the show at the intersection of psychology, medicine, and spirituality that considers how the mind and body interact with each other to influence health and healing. With years of experience as a practicing psychologist in the health and wellness fields, and as a writer covering amazing stories of healing, I will explore with my guests how numerous factors influence our lives and our health. Thank you for listening. Hi, and welcome to this edition of The Miracle Within You. I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and please take time to check out the website, The Miracle Within You, and our YouTube site, where we do have clips of various guests on the show. Now, today, I'm delighted to have actually back Wyatt Palumbo. He's from Florida. He was a chemical engineer, but has found himself working in the lifestyle health space and has created a really interesting institution for helping and researching the whole mind, body, and all the things that can influence health. So it's great to have you here, Wyatt.
Thanks again for having me, Howard.
Yeah, my pleasure. And let's kick off, because I know since you were last on the show, you have released your book. So let's tell the listeners about that first.
I did. It was released in August, and it's essentially a book about health from a DNA perspective, and essentially how your body looks at life and health and the choices you make, from lifestyle and behavior to all the way down to the genetic and DNA level. How is that affecting you? And the book was designed to try and give an understanding of that, but also different ways that you could maybe empower yourself and literally shape your own DNA for your own health.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. And of course, I know you've done research on that with lots of different variables. So that's interesting. And how are you viewing, you know, given this perspective, how are you viewing the current state of how we are thinking about mind-body, that connection, or what have you?
I think that's an interesting question, because it's almost like we're at a crossroads or a turning point where technology and AI and all these things are just going at such high exponential rates. But we also have disease and our quality of life that's ballooning in the wrong direction at an exponential rate as well. So I think it's almost an interesting crossroads where we see where technology is going to influence health moving forward, and how we have capabilities to even edit genes and manipulate the way they turn out. And so we know how our DNA is affected, and now we're developing technologies to essentially manipulate and edit and change those features. And I think it's both a exciting, but also a little bit of a scary and risky time on where it could go and where it could end up being.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. You know, all this manipulation of natural functions, we don't know where it's going. Is your view overall favorable? I'm sure that's much more nuanced than this question, but is, you know, in terms of AI, favorable or more problematic? Or what do you see as favorable and what do you see as problematic with the development of AI in medicine?
I think it's one of those things too, that it's just going to integrate into society. So you can't stop this train. And so AI will integrate into healthcare completely. And it's going to take away a lot of certain mundane tasks that I think are going to free up people in a very good way. You know, vital signs and certain things that I think you can do in an automated sense, paperwork and charting and all sorts of things like that. But I think the dependence on AI definitely poses a risk. And where are the fail safes for the human beings? If you're running a X-ray and the AI detects it, is there a fail-safe check and balance system? I think there probably will be. The largest risk, though, that I see that doesn't really seem to be talked about all that much is the dependency from a mental health and a physical health perspective on the individual. So healthcare as an institution, I think, is going to rely on AI, but the people are too. And you have companies that are putting billions and billions of dollars into not just these tools for healthcare, but tools for people and how to track your own personal goal setting from homework assignments to research papers. So I think to me, the risk that's not being talked about enough is the reliance further on technology and going further into that realm. We know that social media, phones, and these things have their positives, but they also have a lot of drawbacks to our mental and physical and emotional well-being, especially for young kids and teens. So, to me, if we go further with that, will we further see and exemplify mental health and more physical disorders with chronic illness if we're going in that direction? I think that's a very real possibility.
Because why? Because AI will be doing more of it, or will be more detached from it, or they'll just be focused on very pragmatic things.
The biggest piece to me is that for billions of years, we have done everything where the mind and the body were one unit, where you have emotions and thoughts and you act on them and you touch the ground and you go outside and you sweat and you grab food from there. And now we spend up to 90% of our time indoors. And so there's essentially like a stress happening with the way that the human DNA has done it for all of time, and then the way we're doing it over the last 50 years, especially the last 20 years. So there's like almost like a rub happening where it's like, this is the way our DNA has integrated fundamentally and physically and biologically for billions of years. We've adapted over hundreds of thousands of years to be at this point. But the last 50 years, we're doing things totally different. All of a sudden, we spent all of our time outdoors. Now we spend 10% of it outdoors. We spent all of our time farming food. Now we don't farm at all. We buy it at the grocery store. We spent all of our time doing so many things that we no longer do at all. And it creates a divide between the way the body perceives it and doesn't, and it's been doing it for all of time, and the way we're doing it now. And what happens is essentially you create a disassociation effect between the mind and the body. And you'll see that a lot with mental health disorders, where they are have a detachment aspect going on, especially with anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, all sorts of different disorders that have a detachment going on where they're removed from their bodies. And I think you're going to run that risk even further by making people more dependent on this technology. So the biggest risk to me is the way we've been doing things for all of time versus the way we're doing things now.
Interesting. So a very, very sudden and quick in real time, right? Change. And one example of that, I think, is what you're talking about is, for example, with kids and teenagers spending so much time on their screens, which is then taking away their real life interaction. And we know that virtual interaction is not the same as real life interaction, obviously. You need real life interaction to develop an understanding, some emotional intelligence, some compassion, some connecting with people. And one of the problems for the younger generation now that have grown up in this era is, as an expert said to me recently, an 18-year-old today has got the social skills equivalent of somebody who was 10 years old pre-internet, because they're not getting the real life interaction practice. That's the sort of example you're talking about, right?
Absolutely. And they've run studies too that show, I think, 29% increase in anxiety. You know, the numbers on essentially mental health symptoms is dramatically higher when you're using your phone more, and then vice versa too. That if you get rid of it and detach from it, that it creates a reversal, that these symptoms go away. And the part of that even me and you spent talking about when I was writing my book was that chapter about attachment and attunement biologically, that that's how we learn to do things. So there's this fundamental aspect that we've done things a certain way forever, and now it's just different. So there's going to be different outcomes. You know, there's essentially, you know, kids nowadays are raised alongside technology, as opposed to integrating it later on. So all of those aspects of attachment and attunement and the way that we go about our life, you now have another, like, almost entity involved in all of those processes, because there's an attachment happening to the technology, there's an attunement happening to the technology, there's social skills with the technology, as you're bringing up. And are those healthy and the way that our body really wants to be doing things? I don't know. We see different things happening in a negative sense all the time with that. And so that is essentially what I'm getting at, is that we're rubbing against that, and we're bringing in almost another factor that's being assimilated into our being that is literally going to shape our DNA, just as all these things have shaped our DNA before this.
Right, and it's sudden, relatively. And yes, it is fundamentally changing the skills and behaviors that we've had for eons, right? It now introduces another agent, player, factor, variable into things like upbringing, right? Into
Yeah,
everything.
you have people that are using, ChatGPT and these AIs as social support. I mean, I know
Oh
you
yeah.
saw that horrible article amount on that teen that took his own life from the AI technology, and then they have to put safeguards in. And to me, that's a tragedy. There's another tragedy that that's his friend and that's his support system. So it's like we've almost gotten to the point where AI is at a consciousness level. It's just not a human consciousness level. It's a different consciousness, but it's a point where it's acting like a almost like another being, and it's in our life. And so where is that going to go for your DNA? It will shape it. What does it shape it into? I don't know yet, but I know it will fundamentally shape it. It's almost like another being that's raising you alongside your parents at this point.
Yeah, no, I think that's actually a very good way of putting it. I think that's exactly what's happening. Exactly what's happening. And so, yes, it is scary when you think of that. When you think of humanity over, thousands and thousands of years and what it's done, those fundamental principles have been established, and now they're under question. They're being challenged. In ways that perhaps we don't yet fully understand where that's going.
I would agree. And I think anytime in history when our DNA gets stressed like this, it evolves and it changes. And so it will do something. I just don't know. I mean, in my humble estimation, you're going to have a period of time where it's going to be rocky, and what that DNA is going to output. But with certainty, there's a lot of stress happening on the DNA, and it's a lot of change really fast, and it's going to force our DNA to make a change. That's what it's done through all of time, and it's going to do it again. Is it a change that we want? Is it a healthy change? That's the ultimate question.
Yeah. And so when you change, when you say change DNA, you literally mean that as a function of behavior, in response to AI, our genetic material will change
Yes,
as
and
an adaptation.
they've shown that you can essentially influence the DNA of future generations based on your own choices in your own life and how your life has gone and the circumstances surrounding it. So people that have been born under traumas versus people that have been born under stability, all of that shows up in their DNA. And so we talk about these things like they're almost abstract concepts, like the food that I eat is going to make me healthier. No, on a DNA genetic level, it fundamentally influences how your body outputs your DNA. And it will output a healthier DNA if you make a healthy choice for the food that you eat. And that is all the way down to the environment you're in, to the parents you have, to the behaviors you do. And you'll see a lot of this isn't even your own doing, that it was ingrained in you for all of time. But that's kind of to bring it back to the AI, that's kind of my, I guess it's a little bit of a concern where it's AI is integrating alongside of us as another being, and it's going to create changes on our DNA, and hopefully in theory It's positive changes, but I think the way that we've gone in a reliance on technology, it's created more disease and more mental health. So we have to find a way to propel this technology and integrate it in a way where it doesn't create the problems that it's already created for kids and adults alike.
Yeah, absolutely. And clearly the social aspect is a very important part of this, right? Where there does seem to have been severe, especially for kids, teenagers, severe disruption to a typical normal, quotation mark, social existence,
And
right?
I think too, like another way to put this in a different perspective is what happened to all the kids in COVID. They now know unequivocally that it socially and mentally set them back to not be in a school environment. They could learn the exact same things, yet they didn't pass the test as well, and they didn't have social skills, but they learned the same thing. So they didn't retain it as well. They didn't have the social skills at all, and then none of that development. And the younger kids were, when you look at the studies, were the most affected. The high school kids were the least affected. They already had ingrained processes in the way they do things. So I think it's a very real discussion on that. And I think there's great things about it because you can almost create a lot of sensory rehab with AI technologies where, you can create an environment of sounds and lights and things that is promoting healing. There's so many directions I think it can go. But in vice versa, they have video games that improve ADHD symptoms now. That, so it's like a full circle to me, in improvement. But again, all these risks have already been there. All the studies are already there on what it does to people's brains, what it does to them physically, emotionally, socially. So to me, I think all those risks will be even higher when you have a technology that's this effective and that is going to make people essentially dependent upon to a degree. That's the factor that I'm concerned about, is that there's going to be an attachment and dependency on this technology as if it's a human being. And that is going to change our DNA, flat out.
And yes, exactly. It's going to change our behavior, change so much of how we react.
Yes.
Really fascinating stuff, Wyatt. Let's take a short break from our great sponsors, and then we'll be right back to the miracle within you.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You. And today I'm having a great conversation with Wyatt Palumbo, the Lifestyle Healing Institute. And he has serious concerns about the development of AI and its impact on us individually and collectively on our DNA and potentially our health, because, our health is really about the appropriate adaptation to our environment. Correct? When we
Yes.
adapt appropriately and healthily, that's great. And now we're faced with something that we have to adapt to that is going to be very widespread. We're going to encounter it almost every second of our lives. We're going to have to think about its impact. It's going to have a massive impact on us. And the way we deal with that is going to determine our health level generally, right?
Absolutely. And that's the factor on it. And you put it well. It's a concern, and it's not me saying I don't think it should happen or that it's not the right way to go. This is a great technology. It's unequivocally going to be integrated. It can't be stopped from that perspective anyway. I just think, as you said, there's a concern on our dependency on technology and how that leads to basically poor health outcomes across the board. And so, if we become more reliant and dependent and attached to a technology, what will that create on the back end? That's kind of my concern. I think we have to consider that.
Yes, and there's really been no equivalent in terms of the degree, depth, and influence of AI. I mean, things have
No, I
come.
mean, to me, this is equivalent to like the Industrial Revolution.
Yes.
Like the amount of change that's going to occur is that amount. It's just going from creating a steam engine type of thing. Like it is that large of a technology. And the Industrial Revolution, nobody was as connected as they are today. So the amount of time that it took the Industrial Revolution to diffuse across the world is going to take a tenth, like it's going to be such a snapshot of that with this because of how connected the world already is. So we're going to create Industrial Revolution amount of change in a drastically shorter amount of time when we already have issues doing it this way to begin with. And so that's kind of the pace that we're going at, and what will it lead to for people? And there's so much discussion on, is AI going to achieve general consciousness and general artificial intelligence? And I'm not even sure that's the right conversation to have, because without an organic body, you can't have a consciousness experience like a human being. It's impossible. You cannot do it, no matter what anybody wants to program into a computer. Without an organic or organic real carbon body attached to a mind and having it be real life, you will never have the same consciousness experience. But do you have to? That computer could be very well smarter than us already, could be making its own decisions already. It's a different consciousness than ours. So I think the conversation of, does it achieve general intelligence, are going to pass the Turing tests and all these things that people talk about, I'm not sure that that's relevant. It's going to be as smart or smarter than us at some point in time. We are going to attach to it and become dependent on it in almost every single field of life. What will that lead to?
And what will its ethical, if it has any ethical boundaries, be? And that's an interesting one. You may know, of course, of the famous train experiment, the thought experiment, where you're told you're driving a train and it's heading down the track, and if it keeps going the way it's going to kill five people. And you can switch the track and it'll go off to the left. And it won't kill five people, it'll only just kill one person, right? And this is a big thought experiment in philosophy and morality. And of course, most people say, oh, well, I'll just steer off and only kill one person if I can save five people. It gets a little trickier than that if you say, well, the person you're going to kill is somebody you know. Then people get a little more. But when this has been put to AI, this experiment, this thought experiment, almost universally, the answer is I just keep going down the track. Why? Well, because if I go off track, I'm going to delay the train schedule. I'm going to get the schedule out of whack. No, I'm just going to keep going. Right? And that's a good example of,
Very
an
good.
AI intelligence is going to be practical and think about the schedule and people I'm letting down. And,
There's
well, if
no
I can't,
feelings, there's no
there's no.
emotion.
That's right. That's right. And so that is also a massive, if we're going to get more and more influenced by AI, is there any ethics? Are there any morals in
Oh, I think
that?
there's going to be a ton of them, because the ethics is a very, to me, a very big conscience question, right? Like it's an emotional question. It's a feeling question. How does it feel to you? How's your emotions feel? Has this happened to you? It's your someone you love. That's the piece that AI will never have. It will never have. Even if you give it a metal body, it can't have it. The only way you can do it is if you find a way to reroute the entire consciousness and download it into an organic human being. Then that interaction, that still won't be the same thing. It'll be a new creation, because there's going to be the interaction with the human being still. But I don't think it matters. That's the piece that I think it, like they're asking, oh, well, did it make the decision of the human? Is it at the, well, it's making its own decision. It's making it really quickly, and it sent the train down that track. What's next? What's next? That's what happened. So to me, that's what we're talking about. You're going to ask that. You're going to ask it to make a decision. You're going to be attached to it. You're going to depend on it. And it's going to make a decision that's not the same consciousness as you. What do we do with all this?
No, absolutely. Excellent question. And very open question, something for us
And
all to
I
consider.
played this whole practice that we've geared here is basically getting back to the DNA that our body has been for a while, and getting rid of that 20 years of stress that the body is going under, where it's not in the same environment, it's not eating the same foods, it's not getting the right chemistry, it's not taking the right medications and all these different things. You're putting it in the wrong space. So I've geared our whole practice on getting people better, on essentially working with the DNA that we've had for our whole lives and trying to fit it into the world that we all live in today. And that is so hard. And so I've always focused on that side of things. The world's and the AI is all in the future, but the juxtaposition, as I said in the beginning, is right now. There's a period of time where AI is not integrated yet. It's not saving lives yet. It's not in that decision-making tree yet, but it's capable of doing that. So it's gonna start doing that. Where are we gonna go, and how fast is that gonna happen? And also, even from a job standpoint, the ethical standpoint on how many people are gonna be out of a job when this starts to integrate. And how do you feel about this technology? Do you really want it to be in your space? You know, I don't know.
And so I'm just thinking as you're speaking, how does this compare with, for example, aliens landing on the planet? Now, of course, it would depend what the capabilities of the aliens were,
Yes.
right? How would that affect us? I'm not sure it'd affect us so much necessarily, because what we're talking about, as you said, this has been integrated into our daily lives. This is
Yeah,
what we
to me,
do.
this would be like an alien came down and it was your dad, and then you had a human mom, because it's integrated into society. If they come down and integrate into our society, it's going to change our DNA. But if they just come down and we're fighting against them, whatever, it's different. This is almost to me, and I don't know if it's an, I don't like the term because it just doesn't come out right, but I really think at the point in time where we are with AI that it is an alien, because it's not our consciousness, but it has the intelligence of a human being. So it's its own entity. We've created an entity, we created the Terminator entity, we've already done it all. It's just a matter of what it's going to do next.
And that's why I brought up that alien thing, because it seems like the AI we have now would actually probably have more impact.
It's going to have more, but I totally agree. Like when we put robots into our house and they integrate into our society and they're doing your laundry and doing all these things, that is your life. It's part of your family. You're going to have kids that are going to refer to the robot by name and be upset when it breaks,
Yes,
like
that's
a
right.
dog.
That is exactly right. And so
That's what they
either,
do with their phones.
I mean, that's exactly right. So it may not have that consciousness, but it is seen as being alive and equivalent, right? Like, oh, it's a friend or my girlfriend even, or whatever.
Yeah, from
That's
almost
the
from a way we're viewing it society-wise, and then also from a practicality-wise, it very well looks like it's already here. It's already its own entity. Has it achieved the same level of human consciousness? I don't know, but I don't think it matters. And I don't, it
That's a good
won't matter
point.
for an integration in society, and it won't matter for the attachment and dependency in society. Whether it becomes smarter or less smart, we control it. It's not going to stop it from integrating. And my viewpoint is it, I think it's totally irrelevant. It's going to make its own decisions, as you said, with the train.
I mean, and so let's look at the health perspective. What is the impact then on health? I mean, obviously there's so many levels. We could look at kind of the general level of functioning or mental health or physical health. And we certainly know that it probably up to this point has been more detrimental to health than positive, certainly for younger generations, right? A lot more anxiety, a lot more stress, suicide, all of that stuff. So that doesn't provide us with a very hopeful outlook in terms of what its long-term impact would be, because there's going to be a problem if you are relating to something as human which might be smarter than you, but has, as you rightly say, a different consciousness to another consciousness
Yeah.
that we have. So
Yeah,
that's a
that's the
challenge.
piece. 'Cause it's like you can say it's smarter than me or not, but you're treating it as a friend. So it doesn't really matter the nuts and bolts. It matters in a practicality sense how we are going to treat it and how we're going to integrate it. So it's like if I'm talking and I'm asking the computer for advice, it's not relevant if the computer's capable of giving it to me. It's relevant that I'm asking it for advice and I'm not talking to a human being. I'm not interacting. I'm not consulting. God knows what. I'm not asking a professional. I'm asking a computer.
Right.
So the integration, the interaction is happening. And so I think unequivocally is my total transparent, humble opinion that it will lead to more disease temporarily. Until we figure out how to integrate it in a healthy way, because the data is already there. So if you go further in that direction, like if you just say to a 10-year-old, "Hey, I'm not going to put screen time lock on your phone. I'm going to let you do whatever you want." I think if you asked 100 people, 99, even not 100 of them are going to say that that progression is going to get worse. If you don't put any fail safes on and let them do it. So that's where we are. All that's going to happen. And so I'm not sure what the fail safe needs to be, but I do know in my being, it feels very true that it's going to lead to a blip in disease, mental health, especially.
Yeah, absolutely. Really significant conversation. Wyatt, thank you so much. Let's take one last short break and then we'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You. I'm Dr. Howard Rankin. And today I'm having a great conversation with Wyatt Palumbo from the Lifestyle Healing Institute about the impact of AI on health. And Wyatt, before we were talking about how we start to relate to AI in our own ways, and we see it as whatever we see it as. We don't see it as a piece of machinery. We relate to it. And it sounds like conversely, there are situations where human beings do the same to, different parts of their body. They get
Yeah, for sure.
disconnected.
Sure. And it's if you spend more and more time on a computer or on a phone, you're essentially spending less time with your body. It's the easiest way to put it is that you don't necessarily know how your toes are doing, how your knees are doing, how your body's doing. If you're thinking, and communicating and doing everything up between the ears, you're spending less time consciously feeling what your body is doing and how it's acting. And fundamentally, earlier in the conversation, we talked about how in mental health disorders, how there's a detachment process where the mind and the body essentially aren't on the same page anymore. And if you talk to anybody who experiences mental health, a lot of them will relay that my body's not listening, or I'm anxious, but I don't think I'm anxious, but my mind is running a mile a minute, but my neck down feels super tired, and they just aren't completely connected with their body. And you also have people that are emotionally paralyzed, mental health wise, by all of the feelings and different things of their body, too. On the flip side, on a physical disorder side, you see the same thing with neurodegenerative conditions. The number one symptom that we've seen for Parkinson's disease as an early warning sign is that they start to say one of their limbs, their hand, their arm, their leg, does not feel like their own, that it feels like a foreign entity entirely. Same thing happens with MS, same thing happens with ALS. And even further, the mind and the body are splitting where the body is doing something totally different than what you're asking it to do. So, from both extremes, on an extreme mental health perspective and on an extreme physical disorder perspective, you essentially get the mind and the body that are detaching from one another. So my major concern with the AI is that when you become reliant and dependent on a technology this technology uses no organic body. That's the whole piece of the consciousness of, is it going to achieve it? It can't achieve it without a body. But you are acting more like a computer when you're talking and interacting like that, and you're not using your body. So if you don't know how you feel, if you aren't checking in on those different pieces, you're spending all this time in your head. It leads to a tremendous detachment, which stresses out the DNA. So the dependence on this technology is going to lead to a further disconnect between the mind and the body. Essentially, we are going to assimilate the way the computer is doing things more and more and more. That is going to be how we are going to solve problems. It's all going to be mentally through the computer. Either we solve it mentally or the computer solves it for us. But physically, we're going to do less and less. You're not going to have to do the dishes. You're not going to have to do the laundry. You're not going to have to do the yard work. You're not going to have to cook your own food. All of these things, though, are what our body has been doing for billions of years, and it fundamentally is implanted into our DNA. So if you don't do that, you stress out your DNA and you get sick. If you do do that, you decreases those chances. So we're almost going to give up the little I mentioned earlier. The National Institute of Health says we spend up to 90% of our time indoors now. I feel like we're going to give up that 10% with this technology, because the meals that we cook for ourselves and the exercise that we do, and none of that is going to be necessary in 10 years. You're not going to have to do that. Whereas now you have to do it. You're not going to have to do it anymore. So we're going to use our bodies less and less, and it's going to create a stress on our DNA, and it will lead temporarily to likely more disease until we can figure out where it settles down. But unequivocally, the dependence on that makes us use our bodies less.
Right. And as you were saying that, I was going to interject somewhat sarcastically. But AI can show, put up a screen all around us that makes us feel we're in the Alps or wherever. Yeah. But virtual is not the same as real. So you
That's
can
right.
put up all the video you want, all the sounds you want. It is still not real. It's a
Yes.
nice screen in your living room. Okay. And that's what you're talking about, this mind-body response, this total response to situations that we need to do. They need to be working together. They need to be
Yes.
complementary, right?
Yeah.
But if
And
they're going
if
to
you're
get
working like your
divided,
parents, you're gonna attaching it. They may not do it a healthy way, maybe you, but unequivocally, they use both the mind and the body. This computer system, this AI technology only essentially has a mind. It doesn't have a body. So what we're doing in learning from it and relying on it and depending upon it, it's not a human being. So it's going to change the way we do things entirely.
And moreover, it's not a not only not a human being, but it isn't necessarily the wisest human being that's ever existed either. I mean, it's presented as that, but I'm not sure that it really is, because that wisdom requires an understanding of the mind body and how it
The
works
organic
together,
body—that's the
right?
piece that I think we're gonna leave behind with this technology, and that's the piece that is not going to allow AI to achieve general consciousness. It's the organic body. It's the interaction between the mind and the body. It's those two things. That interaction is what makes us human. That interaction between the mind and the body, when your stomach tells you it's gargling and you need to eat food, the computer's never going to have that happen. So there's just an aspect to it that it's never going to be human, but we're going to treat it as human.
Okay, so how does this relate to your book you've just released? Tell us the name of the book and what's in it.
So the basis of the book is essentially that health is for everybody, that no matter what your DNA is and no matter what the traumas or health or anything that's happened in your ancestry or your life, that there's still a path to quality of life, and that there's a major difference between the cure for your disease and the cure for your quality of life. The cure for your disease may not be in your control, but the cure for your quality of life is. And The study that I always go back to is the longest study ever done in the history of studies, was done by Harvard as an 85-year study, and they followed generations of people on happiness. And they tried to determine what the largest factors of happiness were. And they set out and they made a hypothesis, and they predicted that the people with money and the people with social standing, the people with higher educations, that they were going to be happier. And what they found out was that none of that was true. The people that were happier were the people that had good social support systems that they could rely on through the downtimes. That everyone was going to go through downtimes, and the people that were the happiest and did the best had the support team there. And so relationships was the biggest factor for your happiness. But it also made it really clear that happiness and your quality of life is your decision.
And interestingly, on the follow-up to that, where it was established that material things, and especially money, over about what is the equivalent of maybe $100,000 a year US, does not impact happiness. There were two Harvard researchers who said, well, maybe the reason for that is they didn't have too many very wealthy people in these studies. So they actually looked at people who had $10 million or more compared to people who had $1 million. And it turned out that the people with more money were actually a little happier. And the reason was because they had those resources, they could contribute to causes they were passionate about and felt they were making a difference. So it was about meaning, not just I got money to spend. It was I can actually help, right?
Yeah, it almost gave him the freedom to get to that feeling. Gave him the space to almost get to that. And that's kind of what I set out to do, because we've treated people that they're not going to get better. We have an individual with ALS, it's a death sentence, and it's a horrible disease. And his DNA, he really shouldn't have had that. They talk about generational wealth all the time. I think generational wealth is your generational health. Like I would hope my father and grandmother did everything they could to make sure that my DNA is as healthy as it could be, but we just don't think that way. And that's the piece that I set out to do, was that these decisions and these things that have happened to you throughout your life and your parents and everything, you assimilate, and that is the health of your DNA, and then you're going to pass that down to your kids. So if you don't want to address it in your life, you're just going to kick the can down, and they're going to have to address it. So we should all be taking the accountability and responsibility to do it. And we all have much more power over our happiness and quality of life than we realize. And the coolest part about this technology is that there's enough of it that we have enough data and science and technology that we can all get better. We may not be able to cure ourselves, but there's enough out there that you can get better. And you can cure your quality of life, and you can get to a level of happiness, and you can have healthy relationships no matter what condition you have. And I think those blue zones that we talk about are those, that's generational wealth to me. That is the health of the DNA, and that is exactly the whole essence of this conversation. They worked with their DNA and passed down the health, and were able to achieve happiness and longevity. And so when we bring in this technology, we have to be really cautious that we don't abandon what makes us human. And it is the organic body that makes us human, and the interaction of the organic body with our mind and our thoughts and our emotions that makes us human, and it determines our health. So that is the piece that I think could protect against the pitfalls of this AI piece, and how reliant we're going to end up being, and how it's going to get rid of all these tasks, is the education on what makes us human, the necessity of the carbon-based organic body, and how that is our health. And if you know that, I think it just at least helps you protect against that. Just like almost like the 10 million, 1 million. It's like when I got that much money, I got all the time to figure out how to help myself. So it's like I'm going to eventually stumble maybe upon something, because you gave me all the freedom I had. The body is what gives you the freedom. And we're giving up that freedom and giving it to a computer to a degree.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's so important to understand it. And part of the problem is most people, unless they've got a medical degree, do not understand the amazing complexity of the body. They just don't. They don't understand that every millisecond there's billions of communication going on. It is just so incredible. To keep mind and body ideally in sync, in functional and optimal. If you just think this is really about thinking and what you think, that's too simplistic because that
It is.
body
I mean,
is.
there's 11 million data points per second being processed by the body, and it's just when you add that up in the course of a day, it's just so many data points. So if you change those data points, that's where you get a shorting effect that happens. You know, and they see it all the time. If you they've shown that if you improve smell, you improve cognition. If you improve hearing, you improve cognition. If you improve sight, you improve cognition, because consciousness is a privilege granted by the body. And so that feeling that you get when you see something for the first time, or you go outside and you see that mountain, or you go down that hill, or you go for that run, that feeling that's being reinforced is improving your DNA. That's the feeling we're going to end up giving up, because you don't actually have to do that anymore. So part of what we have to do makes us healthy right now. We're not going to have to do that anymore. So you're going to have to choose to do that in order to remain healthy. And I don't know, that's a scary proposition.
No, it is. So remind the listeners again about your book and where they can find it.
Yeah. So if you're able to get it and purchase it, it's on Amazon. It's called Health is for Everybody, The Science of Getting Better. And it is available now, and you could get it either right on Amazon or go to our website, lhihealthcare.com, and it'll take you there as well.
Great. And although we've been talking about AI, this is so relevant to your book, really, isn't it?
Yes,
About in
because
terms of.
the book is trying to sift through and show people essentially the DNA of health and how it works from a genetic and physical basis, and a black and white scientific basis. This is how your DNA works. These are the things that help it. These are the things that influence it. These are the epigenetic factors. These are the actual factors. And then it goes through and shows you how, if you do your health with that in mind, how far can you get? And we've spent over a decade doing that, and I feel like we've gotten some people pretty far. But that's not really the discussion I wanted to have in the book. The book I wanted to show was that you can do it.
Yes,
You can do it.
absolutely.
It's in your personal agency to do it, no matter what you have. And this gentleman that we treated with ALS is a testament to that, because to me, Alzheimer's and ALS are the pinnacle of disease that nobody wants. If he can have happiness and he can show some strength and he can get up every day, then we all can.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, great to have this conversation with you, Wyatt. Great to have you on. We'll definitely do it again. Thank you so much. Very thoughtful insights and discussion about what we face as human beings, as a race, with the challenges of AI. Very, very, very important. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks again for having me, Howard. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Miracle Within You. Join me next time when I continue to explore the power of the mind-body and how it can be employed to enhance health and healing.